Hello, and welcome to Synopsis, your weekly roundup of news and analysis from UMFIF around the world, coming to you from UMFIF HQ in the City of London. I'm Julie Davia-Vignoli. Today, we're talking about central bank independence, the effect of monetary policy on trust in central banks, scaling up sustainable finance in Asia, and UMFIF's latest report on the central bank's role in tackling climate change. All that, and more, coming right up. Welcome to this week's edition of Synopsis. First up, our chairman, David Marsh, wrote about the central bank's barometer of political independence. In view of clouds over the world economy and controversy over whether monetary policy could counter lower growth, central bankers believe political pressure can become a major factor hindering their ability to fulfill their mandates. This was one of the main points raised at the UMFIF Amundi Asset and Risk Management Seminar in London on the 6th of February, which you can read more about on our website. "It isn't easy," wrote David, "to deduce the moment when pressure grows beyond merely a nuisance and becomes an acute danger. Central banks worried about their independence need to focus on three basic issues: appointments of key central banking officials, structure and governance of central banks' operations, and overt and covert pressure on monetary policy decisions. Monitoring such developments could provide a barometer of central banks' true position in domestic and international power play." You might have already read our report on global public confidence in monetary, financial, and payment institutions, which is based on a survey of more than 14,000 people across 13 countries. As John Orchard, our chief executive officer, wrote, "Lurking in the detail of this poll is an important headache for European policymakers." Perhaps unsurprisingly, in the three euro area countries surveyed, we found that ordinary citizens tended not to trust technology firms as cyber money issuers. But we also unearthed in these countries marginal distrust in central banks possibly carrying out such functions and lower negative trust in them overall. John wrote, "The similar and remarkably high levels of distrust across the three euro area economies surveyed suggest that monetary policy might be a factor behind lower trust in central banks. Some economists have made the case that issuing central bank digital currency would be a way to solve the zero lower bound of interest rates. Our survey indicates that ordinary citizens in these countries would react to such steps with considerable ill will. Enforcing negative rates through the abolition of cash is likely to prompt a search for other stores of value, just as inflation does." At our asset management seminar earlier this month, it emerged that central bankers believe, like most other people, that they are ill-equipped to deal with any forthcoming downturn. Given the already low levels of central bank trust in the euro area evinced by our survey, moving deeper into negative rate territory risks bringing a further loss of trust and political capital. However, central banks generally agree they have a role to play in tackling the climate crisis. Aziz Durrani is senior financial sector specialist at the Southeast Asian Central Bank's Research and Training Center. Earlier this week, he wrote about a survey the center undertook with its members, representatives from central banks and monetary authorities across the Asia-Pacific region, to understand their views on climate and the transition to a low-carbon economy. The survey showed that 94% of respondents thought that their institutions should be involved in helping encourage low-carbon financing and green initiatives. While only 22% of the respondents had any strategic investment mandates or approaches to scale up private investment in low-carbon sectors, 72% were aware of national commitments to help implement green finance initiatives. Only 29% had already issued financing instruments or implemented regulatory policies to encourage private financing for low-carbon investments. Finally, 39% had already trained their staff and external financial services personnel on climate change risks and opportunities. Central banks across Asia have already taken a variety of actions to mitigate climate risk. The People's Bank of China, for example, has launched a green refinancing policy which allows commercial banks to use green loans or bonds as collateral for borrowing from it at discounted rates, funds from which are lent to green businesses. If you want to find out more about how central banks are responding to the climate crisis, the latest UMFIF report is essential reading. Tackling Climate Change, the Role of Banking Regulation and Supervision is based on surveys with 33 central banks and regulatory authorities. Our research found that 70% of respondents consider climate change a major threat to financial stability. Just over half of central banks say they are monitoring climate risks, but there is disagreement over responsibilities, with 12% overall saying that while they see climate change as a major risk, action should come from other policy institutions, such as government departments. To read the full report, visit omfif.org. Looking ahead to next week, OMFIF is hosting a variety of meetings around the world. Across the pond in New York, the team behind Calibra, the Facebook subsidiary developing Libra, joined us on Monday to discuss the next decade of digital finance. On Wednesday, Kartik Athreya, Executive Vice President and Director of Research at the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond, will be speaking at our roundtable on winners and losers in the low-interest environment. Back in Europe, our 10th Economists meeting takes place in Frankfurt on Thursday. This seminar will focus on the effect of new European leadership on fiscal and monetary policy reform and how Germany and Europe can navigate current challenges from climate change to digitalization. And in London, on Tuesday, Megan Quinn, Deputy Secretary of the Macroeconomic Group at the Commonwealth Treasury, will present the Australian and global economic outlooks. Finally, on Friday, Antonio Romeo, Permanent Secretary at the Department for International Trade, will discuss the UK's global economic position after Brexit. If any of those meetings take your fancy, you can find more information and register to attend on our website. And that is all for this week's edition of Synopsis. To read more about everything we've discussed, go to www.omfif.org or scroll down to the show notes underneath this podcast, where you will find links to everything mentioned today. If you wish to stay up to date with OMFIF news, analysis, and forthcoming meetings, sign up at omfif.org/subscribe. I'm Julie Dyfe-Mignoli. Thank you for listening.